WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
The success of Martin Cruz Smith's 1981 detective thriller, Gorky Park, and its portrayal of corrupt Moscow bureaucrats angered official Sovietdom. Not until Glasnost arrived was Smith able to visit the Soviet Union again. And now officials are even allowing a Russian edition of Gorky Park to be printed. His new novel, Polar Star, marks the return of Police Inspector Arkady Renko. Smith's hero got into trouble with the party after he solved the crimes in Gorky Park. He's been on the run since. Renko's now hiding aboard a Soviet factory ship in the Bering Sea, processing vast amounts of fish collected by American trawlers. Renko works on the slime line, getting the catch. Here's an example of how Smith sets a scene with detail. He passed the rotary saws to the slime line, where workers stood in slots on either side of the belt. Like automatons, the first pair slit fish bellies open to the anus. The second pair sucked out livers and guts with vacuum hoses. The third pair washed slime from the skin, gills, and cavities with saltwater jets. The last pair vacuumed the fish a final time and laid the trimmed and dressed result on a belt moving toward the freezers. In the course of an 8-hour watch, the gutting and spraying spread a mist of blood and wet pulp over the belt, workers, and walkway. They were not the usual hero workers, least of all the lean, pale man with dark hair loading the dressed fish at the end of the line. When I first read that passage and wiped the fish blood off my hands, I wondered how Martin Cruz Smith researched his book.
I couldn't go to the Soviet Union. I wanted to do another book about the Soviets' subject because it fascinated me too much. And yet I couldn't go back because I was then still labeled anti-Soviet scum. That was an official label and one I wore with distinction, but it meant that I couldn't get back into the country. And the only part of the Soviet Union I could reach was a piece of it that was sort of floating in the Bering Sea, which was this factory ship. So I had to go to the Aleutian Islands and go out on a boat and meet a Soviet factory ship and spend some time, as much time as I could, on the boat and with the captain and the crew. Which wasn't as much time as I'd hoped for, but it's a necessary part. At least I can't write in a complete vacuum. I have to touch down, however briefly, to know what I'm writing about.
Your hero, the investigator Renko, has found himself in exile because of his great success in Gorky Park, and he has made it all the way to this fishing ship. And it sounds like you, as official anti-Soviet scum, also found the only way you could still exist in the Soviet Union was on this fishing ship. How did you manage to slip in?
Well, it was I had an assignment from the New York Times Sunday Magazine to do an article on this joint venture between American and Soviet fishermen in the Bering Sea. And of course, in the back of my mind was maybe this would develop into something more. You never know until you get someplace. Yeah, when you get someplace, your imagination immediately starts to work or immediately lies down dead, and you don't know what's going to happen. But as soon as I got to the Aleutian Islands, I suspected there was a possibility here. I went out on the pilot ship that was going out to meet the Soviet factory ship that was in fact carrying the money for this. For the port call by the Soviet crew, so anyone on that boat was welcome. And then I got to meet the captain in a good frame of mind. And that evening, took the captain and his crew to dinner at the best restaurant in Dutch Harbor, which was coincidentally the only restaurant in Dutch Harbor. And the following day, I was given a tour of the ship by the captain. But that's the way I got on board, simply going and jumping on a ship. There is no other way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How long were you on the ship?
I was on the ship for about 2 days. When I was on the ship, then I was on and off the ship for 2 days because I spent part of the time with the captain in the harbor. It was an interesting and an intense conversation with the captain because Between the two days came a night, and during the night he told me that he was flipping through some old American magazines in his cabin when he came upon an old Newsweek with a picture of me, identifying me as the author of this anti-Soviet tract, Gorky Park, which even the captain in Vladivostok had heard of. And so he wanted to know, apparently he'd gone around, run around the deck of the ship with this picture, asking people if it was, in fact, the face of the devil. Everyone agreed it was. And so we took a long walk on the above the harbor, on the hills around the harbor, and talked about the nature of being anti-Soviet and the distinction between that and writing an honest story. And I pointed out that Gorky Park was critical of Moscow and the Soviet Union. It was also critical of New York City. It was also critical of the FBI. And I asked his help on the work I was doing in this magazine article or whatever else I was doing. However, with the proviso, he would have no censorship or influence over it. And at the end of this conversation, he decided that he wanted to help me. And so he invited me back on board.
One of the details that you describe in sort of unrelentingly grim and fascinating detail is the slime line where the fish that's hauled in to the Russian ship is processed. You have Renko, your investigator, working on the slime line. Did you have a chance to work on the slime line, and could you describe it a bit more?
Well, I wish I had a chance to work on the slime line. I don't know. Boy, that sounds like the most insincere statement I've ever heard. I wish I'd had a chance to see people working on the slime line, I think would be more accurate. But no, I didn't, because the deal I had with the captain fell apart.
Hmm.
I was going to spend a week on his ship doing just that, watching people on the slime line, watching people in all the different aspects of how the fish were processed and brought on board, and then spend a week on an American ship. And he asked me to, in fact, stay on the Soviet ship, to leave port with him, not to leave the ship. But the Americans told me that if I left on a Soviet ship, the captain, in fact, could get in trouble. He was willing to take the risk, but I thought that that I could not abuse his generosity by putting him at risk at all. So I left on an American boat, and the deal was that when we got to the fishing grounds, I would transfer. Unfortunately, and perhaps this is what he foresaw, on the way there, the Soviet embassy in Washington found out about what was going on and barred me from the boat.
Well, since then, you have somehow been historically reconstructed, I guess, and have just recently toured Russia. How were you treated when you on your current visit?
It was so different. It was really quite like being reborn with I don't know what the Soviet equivalent of a silver spoon is. The first time I was there, I had to go purely as a tourist, and I had no help at all from anyone. This time I went, I was given a car and a driver and an interpreter, and I was taken, ushered to an interview at the Ministry of the Interior with the general who's in charge of criminal investigation. And it was the most implausible visit. Return to Moscow, I could have imagined.
Both Gorky Park and a Polar Star give incredibly realistic senses of life in the Soviet Union, and you have accomplished this on relatively few visits each time to do your research. Now that you have been officially rehabilitated and can spend probably all the time you want, do you think you'd become overwhelmed by detail?
Well, sometimes I wonder why I don't write more about the United States. Maybe that's it. Maybe there's this a simple fact that you're looking through almost a hole in the wall, and what you are seeing is limited. And so the imagination has to fill in everything else. In a way, that frees the imagination, I suspect. I don't analyze it too much because I don't think it's wise to analyze the way one sees too much. I am more of a rewriter than a writer, and I guess I think about every single word I write down. But the way I see the world, the way I see the Soviet Union, I don't care to think about too much, because then if I get involved in the mechanics of it, I probably will never throw the ball. But I think there is something to what you say, Sedge, about not being overwhelmed by detail, because I suspect that that's what frees up that part of me which can simply write.
One of the qualities that your books have is of making more human the Soviet Union, and by doing it in the descriptions of the day-to-day life, the workings, the petty sort of worries and excitements that the people on the boat have. Have you had any response from people who felt you're making these people too friendly, too real, too human?
None. The people who react to the book. Let me just say the Soviets who react to the book, who have read the book, are simply are very pleased. Because first of all, they're always looking at me a little bit askance. They're always trying to figure out, does he really write them? I mean, here's this guy who's an American who has spent a total of probably 21 days in the Soviet Union. He doesn't speak Russian. Maybe he knows somebody who can write who's Russian. And that would explain better why he has this affinity for us, this sympathy for us, and likes to write about us and cares about the tiny parts of our lives.
Martin Cruz-Smith, thank you very much for coming in on Fresh Air today.
You're welcome.